All right, our first speaker tonight is Heart Attack Matt. Oh,
it's hot as fuck. Hotter than crack pipe on the first of the month in this motherfucker. All right. Hey, I'm addict named Matt. All right. I just want to thank the committee for asking me to share, man, and believing in my recovery. Right. Not many people believed in me for a long time. Right. I was an addict, man. I'm going to identify. I was an addict that found freedom in handcuffs. Right. I knew once them handcuffs hit me, I didn't have to use again for a little bit. Right, I knew I was going to have a bed and something to eat. I've been incarcerated half my adult life. Right, I told myself I can handle this. This is my life. It's okay, man. See, I've been thinking. I've been sitting here reading that, man. And it says, when at the end of the road, man, when it says, talking about we do recover, when at the end of the fucking road.
That's right.
Right? When at the end of the fucking road. And the end of the road looked a little different for me, man. I'm talking about 39 white fucking key tags. I'm talking about ending up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous playing with this fucking thing. Playing with my life because I didn't respect it. But I fucking love Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God for our third tradition. Only requirement is the desire to stop using. If you're up in here and you're high, just keep coming back, man. Right? Thank God for the fifth tradition that somebody kept carrying the motherfucking message to me. He's sitting in the front row. He's now my sponsor.
That's right. Share.
He continued to carry the message no matter if he seen me high in the rooms, if I relapsed, if I got a white key tag. And now my friends carry the message. You carry the message to me. Because when I came up in here, I was motherfucking lost. Lost in the motherfucking sauce. Don't know how to motherfucking live life. Right? A lot of people think the stories I tell up here, they're kind of funny, but they wasn't funny at the time. Right? It wasn't funny at the time. Right, when I got clean, man, I didn't know how to fucking work. I didn't know what work was. I hustled, black market. Right? I was gonna say I was a fucking crackhead. That's what I did. Right? I didn't have time to go to work. I had shit to do. All the motherfucking time. At least I thought I did. When I got here, man, this thing took me to the animalistic level. I'm talking about eating out of trash cans, staying in a trap house. Man, my bed was a little bean bag with a baby blanket. You know them little baby blankets they give you at the hospital? That was my blanket. It covered my fucking shoulder, you know what I mean? Lived in a fucking trap house, man. I didn't know what a real home was. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew my parents did, but I didn't know what it looked like as an adult. Animalistic level, man, when I got a job, man, this shit's hilarious now to me. Right? When I got a job, I got a job at Bob Evans, man. Right? Because what I want to say, man, is this program is a lifestyle, man. It's a lifestyle. And we begin to value spiritual principles as surrender, humility, and service by reading our literature, right? Working some steps and going to motherfucking meetings, right? So, like, that's what I was doing in early recovery. And I went to get a job, man, and they gave me this little card and they said, you're going to get paid on that. I was like, all right, that's what's up. And I worked for about 3 weeks, man. And I was like, I bet there's some money on this little card they told me. I was like, bro, take me to the ATM, man. I need to get some money. Talking about animalistic level, man. Right? I'm at the ATM. This motherfucker's spitting receipts at my ass. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I went to him, I said, where do I take these to get my motherfucking money? I was doing fucking balance inquiries, man. I done spent $10 on balance inquiries at the motherfucking ATM I was at. He laughed like y'all, but it was serious to me. Like when I went to get an ID, man, I'm talking about little stuff. But that little stuff, man, because just staying clean for a day was a miracle to me. It says that in our literature. Any clean addict is a miracle. But to keep this miracle alive, we must, we must have awareness, surrender. What else does it say? Awareness, surrender, and growth. That was growth. Like, I wasn't going to the fucking BMV, man. That's the fucking government building. They arrest you. Do they?
Yeah.
They did to me. I don't know. You ever been to the BMV? I hadn't been to the BMV because I thought they was going to arrest me. But there's growth. I went to the BMV, right? And got my ID and shit and got that card. Man, and then they gave me a motherfucking food stamp card, man. And I was like, man, I was at the meetings with girls and I'm like, look at that. That motherfucker ain't even been slid yet. It got silver on it, baby. You want to have a picnic? But this is growth for me at the time. Growth. Right? Because you're talking to a person that ain't got education at all.
Come on, man.
A motherfucker, no fucking education. Barely reading about a 7th, 6th grade level. Man, I'm talking about growth, man. I'm talking about keep on staying clean. They go, you know, I knew it for years. I knew where the solution. That's why I was so fucked up. Because I knew where the fucking solution was found. But I didn't want to put the work in. We do recover, right? At the end of the fucking road. But there's work before I get to there. I never got the fucking gift of desperation before then. But I'm talking about the gift of desperation laying in Springfield, Ohio on Johnny Lyle Avenue in the fucking rain in a muddy fucking backyard of the trap house crying.
Come on, get free.
In the fucking fetal position, man. Like, I just don't want to use no more, man. I don't give a fuck about nothing else. But the gift of desperation was there. I would have did fucking anything you fucking told me. So let me stay clean. That's it. I don't even care. But the thing is, when I got clean, I didn't know I was embarking on a spiritual journey.
Come on, man.
I didn't know that. Because I didn't understand a God. But the literature taught me how to understand a God, and y'all was my God. Y'all was my higher power. Because y'all helped me stay clean. Talk to me late nights when I'm thinking about fucking killing myself. Because I don't want to use. I'm not a motherfucker that says, if I use, I'm going to die. If I use, I hope I fucking die. Because what if I fucking get stuck for another fucking 20 years? Fuck that shit, die. I hope I do. That shit was miserable. You know, this journey, man, it's hard, man. Narcotics Anonymous ain't for everybody. It's hard because they talk shit. They do. They call me the fucking president. Gets on my fucking nerves. But it's all right, man. But I kept going, man. I kept staying clean. Like, I got my own apartment, right? First time ever. Got my own apartment. Trap houses right across the street. I pull my kitchen chair up here and watch that motherfucker every night. Wonder what they selling over there. Man, that's popping over there. See, that was the illusion of what if only. Just one more time, man. But I had to break it and recovery and relapse. It says we must break it now. We must do something right now. And it was during COVID. And I went to any lengths to stay clean. I think that's when he said, this match serious. because I was getting on fucking Zoom. You're talking about a motherfucker that don't know how to work a fucking ATM. You know how hard it was to work that fucking Zoom? It took me a week to get on a meeting. I'd get on there and they'd be like, "We're going to say the Serenity Prayer now." Fuck, I missed the whole meeting. Missed the whole fucking meeting, man. But it's all right, I got the end. Better late than never, right? But I was willing to go. I'm still willing to go to any length.
Come on, man.
Still. I'm still doing this, man. I don't take the disease lightly because I know where it took me. Yeah. And I got my apartment, man. And see, I didn't believe this, but there's a time like the pink cloud goes. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I'd be like, oh, no matter what. Yeah, recovery's great. Oh, then let some shit happen. Let some shit happen. I'm like with this girl, and I can't put down the pornography. And she's like, finds out, and she cries, and da-da-da-da. And I'm like, fuck. And I got this phone that fucking won't fucking stay charged about 5 minutes. I got, you know, them one of the adapters? I had to carry one of them motherfuckers around because I wanted to watch porn so much, my pop-ups were like, I couldn't even call a motherfucker on my shit. And it was an Obama motherfucking phone. You know what I mean? So it was like the greatest thing I ever had in my life because you could touch it and move shit. Right? I didn't know how to use it. I knew how to text message and watch porn. That's about it. I knew how to find that porn. But man, it taught me something, man, because it was another addiction, man. There's room for all manifestations in this room right now. Right? And the pornography, I didn't understand that I was harming this girl when she found out. You know, man, how this fucked up. But how she found out, she came to fucking in my house and there's a fucking nut rag laying on the motherfucking table.
Who?
Oh, fuck.
Fuck.
Nut rag, I'll tell you about that.
Harming motherfuckers, you know what I mean? Clean. I'll stop using. I lost the desire to use. But I didn't know how the fuck to live right. I didn't know how to treat people good. And that probably didn't happen until about a year ago. It started to happen. Because I went through some fucking steps, and then I stopped. I stopped. My first sponsor, I was waiting for 4 years. Went through the steps, and he's like, I'm not doing Narcotics Anonymous no more. You need to find a sponsor. I was like, fuck. Then I got a sponsor, and he did the same fucking thing. I mean, I don't think he stopped, but almost. I don't know how you almost stopped, but I just thought about that shit. But man, I'm in my apartment. I got this girl, man, there's growth, right? You see Narcotics Anonymous happening in people's lives. You see it. Fuck reading the book. Let me see how you acting on the outside of this motherfucker. Let me see how you treating people at work. Let me see you cussing the gas station clerk out. I mean, I do that shit all the time. I can't help it, man. It seems like the worst are the old ladies. Like, man, just because you old don't mean. Yeah, I was ready to pull one old lady's glasses off. Stomp on them. I can't touch her. No, but growth was happening to me. Because I don't know how to live right. And I'm living in this studio apartment. And we had this great idea. The girl's going to move in. But I want to tell you right now, me and my wife, she's my wife now.
That's right.
And we've been together almost married almost 5 years now.
Yeah, man.
Right? I'm talking about a spiritual principle of commitment. I ain't had to step out on my marriage not one time. Have I thought about it? Fuck yeah. You got to be spiritually fit up in this motherfucker to be married. Whew. Bitch with 4 days be like, ooh, yeah. It's all right.
Pineapple.
But like growing through this, man, like, and getting married, man, and I told you, like, growth, right? I'm talking about a person with no education, bro.
Oh, man,
none. No education. Go back, get a GED. Right? I don't even barely know how to read. I had to read the NA text because I done memorized that motherfucker. That's the only reason I had to read it. I did step 182 times and kept getting high. Oh, this shit don't work. But it does when you come to the end of the road and you get this desperation, and then it turns into what?
Passion,
baby. Because now I'm feeling good about recovery. I done got through some no matter what. Mama laid in the hospital in the ventilator. I didn't get high. My sister about died. I didn't get high. You know what I mean? My mom's losing my mind. I didn't get high. So I got some evidence that Narcotics Anonymous fucking works. As long as I don't get high. You ever try to work steps on crack?
Yeah.
It's boxing. I have. Don't work. It don't work because it's an inside job, man. It ain't me. When I'm getting high, it ain't me. See, well, I find a God of my understanding. Spiritual growth starts to come in. Right? Spiritual growth starts to come in. And I go to motherfucking college. Now I got an associate's degree, man. You're talking about a three-time felon. No education. 20 years of drugs. Right, that's not the only thing, man. Like, I go to Ohio University. Only 2% of violent offenders get to walk on campus. And I'm one of them.
That's right,
come on, man.
Because Narcotics Anonymous told me to come on up. It told me to say, don't take no for a fucking answer. Do the work. Freedom ain't free up in this. Right, if I had to walk back and forth to work for the first couple years of my recovery, I don't put no fucking conditions on this shit no more. Because before I'd be like, I ain't going to work. I got to walk. Fuck that. Sally won't give me a ride. I ain't going. Fuck it. I'm lying. I didn't work. But like, I'm coming to this point, man. This point where I started to lose my fucking mind. And I started to push, like, my wife away. I was fucking self-centered as fuck. My ego was huge. Nobody in the room could tell me shit. I started becoming my own higher power. I did this work. That's a lie. God did this work. I just put a little bit of footwork in. Right, he gave me the increase. Because through working the steps, I was able to identify with the power greater than myself that I call God. God is the miracle worker, not me. I got to understand that sometimes when I get up to this podium, I got to sit my ass down like you ain't shit. Because I'll get to thinking, yeah, you're the fucking man. You're a fucking junkie. Remember that. Remember where the fuck you came from. Remember that fucking beanbag. Remember that you're 23-year-old. She just turned 23 March 3rd. Don't like your ass still. Remember that shit.
Come on, man.
You know how that fucking feels? It fucking hurts. Because I feel like I've done the work. But I gotta look back. What did I do to her? Fucking signing my rights over when she was fucking 12 years old like it wasn't shit, like she was a fucking piece of trash. I thought I was doing the right thing. Thank God she has a beautiful mother that takes care of her. She calls me Matt. You know how hard that is? But I had to accept it because it's my fault. Right? It's my fault. Nobody else did that shit. That's the part to where I've come to, because when I was in early recovery, I didn't understand. I used to blame the judges, the lawyers, the other people I was around. You locked me up. No, I locked me up. You're the reason I'm like this. But today, man, when I was pushing people out, I didn't want to use This was about a year and a half ago, a year ago. I didn't want to use, but I wanted to get locked up because I was sick of dealing with life. I was sick of paying bills. I was tired of my fucking wife bitching at me. I was tired of taking care of my 12-year-old stepdaughter. Stepdaughter, if I can be honest. I was tired, and I knew I could run and just do some time and lay down and not have no responsibility. Didn't have to go to no fucking meetings no more. That shit's hard the longer you stay here. It's hard. This thing will fucking tell you, it tells me some shit. I don't know about, I'm a sick motherfucker. Sick as fuck, man. Oh, man, I say some crazy shit. I told the bitch, I'm sorry, I keep saying bitch. That's just how I talk. You know what I mean? I'm sorry to the women. But at the dollar store, I was like, yeah, you coming to the show tonight? She was like, what show? I was like, yeah, you know, my name's Matt. I'm going to be out to the fairgrounds doing this big show. What the fuck? And there was like, yeah, country music. Yeah, we're going to be out there getting wasted. And she's like, oh, we got to be here till 10. I was like, we'll be there later than that, about 2:30. Come out there. I hope she don't go because I never said I was lying. But like I came to this point now, right? Because this my recovery, man. I'm finally feeling that happy, joyous, and free that our literature talks about. That peace, right? I'm starting to feel that. Like my marriage started going bad, and like I didn't know why. But once you look in the mirror, motherfucker, because I was like, "You're crazy, bitch. Not me. You're crazy, sponsee." Because I'm talking about sponsorship being a two-way street. My one sponsor, he sponsored me probably for a year. Huh? I'm talking about out walking around saying I'm beating up the next motherfucker I see. He's out searching for me. Found me on the church steps. Back to the basics. Fuck you, mother. Back to the motherfucking basics. Right, my new sponsor said, where are you at on step four? I said, well, I did step two. I started step three. And he's like, well, go back to step one. I'm like, for real? I got 16 questions answered.
That's right.
Right, and one that really sticks out to me, it's like the second or third question, I think. I don't know. But it says, when you become obsessed with something, does your thinking follow a pattern? And I started to think about that shit. Because now I got this gambling manifestation. It just keeps going like this, right? I just got to keep recovering. Because it says if I stay clean, then I can recover in other areas of my life. So, like the marriage started going good. Peaceful. That's again, I'm like, I'm fucking, why do I keep gambling? Because you keep going to the casino. And I tell myself that shit. Still go. We went. I had to speak in Columbus, and I told my he's like my fucking newcomer that I hang out with. Let's go to the casino, bro. We'll go there 3 hours before the meeting. Fuck. $500 later, 45 minutes into it. Here we are. I'm talking about, you know, like this, trying to find this peace in my life, man. And like, these motherfuckers know me. And my sponsor's like, yeah, they got a little place there where we're going. Got 400 slot machines. I'm like, where's that at? Chris told me there wasn't no gambling spots around here. He said, my wife don't have to worry. But man, there's growth each time that I have a setback. When I'm having a setback, God's trying to set me up for something greater. Right, and right now, because I only got 5 minutes left, but maybe three now, right? I could talk all fucking night. I love myself. Right, so, what did I say? What was I about to say? Oh, this peace in my life right now, man, because I'm working steps. I call. We talk almost every day, like if not every other day. My dude calls me. You know, I went to 4 meetings last week. I went to 3 the week before that. You know what I mean? 2. I'm always hitting meetings, you know what I mean? Talking to people, doing service work. I'm the area chair, area literature person. So I'm like, I'm always involved. And God sees that.
Come on, man.
He sees me working, so he's like, let's give Matt some peace. And I got some peace, man, where I can sit down and watch some TV and this motherfucker don't run. Because my thinking follows a fucking pattern when I get, because this is what it did when I was in treatment and shit, or when I was getting high. It would always say, you ate a couple Twinkies, motherfucker. You got some power back. You know what it says with gambling? You just got paid. You got an extra $300. You got some power back.
Set up.
Man, did you see that black girl? Woo! Let's look at the phone. Because now I'm in a fantasy world. Just fantasize or some shit. When I got a woman over here that loves me no matter what. We live the program in our marriage. Right? So, moving forward, growth, man. Spiritually fit right now. I got to keep fanning the fucking fire. Fanning the fire, because I'm the motherfucker that's... I'll be like, fuck narcotics anonymous. Especially when we get to them at fucking area meetings and shit. And you want to kick people in the teeth.
Yeah.
Like, no, we're doing it this way. We're doing it my... This is why they call me a president. This way is the way we're doing it. This table's got to be like this. But, man, I'm so grateful to be here, man. And to be able to share my story. You know what I mean? I can only share my story. And it's that's my message. Right? Just keep coming back. Because I kept coming back. And I finally got the gift of desperation. Winning the fucking end of the road. I pass.
Y'all give him another hand.
Yeah.
All right, next speaker is Matt Kay.
Hi, Matt.
Thank you, man, for carrying the message. My name is Matt. I'm an addict. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that this committee asked me to share this. It's real special to me. My first March Madness was 3 years ago, 2022. My grandpa passed away on February 28th. I was sitting in the hospital, and my sponsor and everybody's coming in and out of the hospital rooms. And after, you know, he passed... I was overwhelmed, you know, started feeling feelings, and grief is especially hard for me because my grief is like this huge resentment against myself. Man, why'd I waste all that time? If only you would have said that, why didn't you do this? And I got all these resentments against myself. And my sponsor said, man, come to March Madness with us. And it saved my life. I came back from March Madness and was able to get the funeral together and all the things. And so, like, this convention right here holds a special place for me. And then last year, all right, so let me just put this out here. I was not lost. I knew exactly where I was at, okay? The problem was, I guess nobody else knew where I was. You know what's it's funny because, like, through all this, in active addiction, I spent like 4 years on the side of an expressway in a tent. Nobody ever came looking for me. I get clean and I'm in the woods for 8 hours and search and rescue shows up. I'm grateful. I want to do something just for a second. If you guys don't mind, I just want to take a moment of silence. If you want to, close your eyes. To think about the people that we know that are out there suffering right now, that don't know there's a way out, that have no idea about the joy and the love and the peace we feel in these rooms. And in that same moment, I want you to thank your higher power that you're not there right now. I'm hoping that I don't say anything that makes anybody feel unwelcome. Because I'm glad that the addict before me brought up the third tradition, and to free myself from judgment. If you're sitting in this room right now and you feel like you don't belong, that means you belong. I know what it was like, you know, to sit there and think, man, I don't fit in right here. And these people, they're all just talking about me, and nobody, no, they got all these ideas and judgments about me, you know, because the world revolved around Matt when I first got here. And sometimes it still does. And so I hope I don't say anything that makes anybody feel unwelcome. In our literature, it says that the generous application of compassion is more therapeutic to the suffering addict than the free application of judgment. And I want y'all to, there's an addict back in the, my home area that used to share that before he spoke, man, and it's so profound. Just those words, man, because check us out. In Narcotics Anonymous, you don't have to, you ain't got no promises to make, no pledges to sign. You don't have to come up to me and tell me you're going to stay clean for the rest of your life. I don't want none of that from you. I want to love you just as you are right now in this moment. Imperfections and everything. Because what happened for me was I came in Narcotics Anonymous with imperfections. And people love me in spite of love. Alright, so I wanted to do something because it's hard. Coming here tonight was hard for me. And there's, you know, I don't know if I'm ready right now to share on a group level, all of it. But what I will say is there was a period of my life over the past year and maybe even a little longer, where I was consumed by my defects. And I come up here and I'd share real good and I'm spitting out of the literature and I got all this and you know, I stayed clean, but I was living dirty as fuck. And it's funny because the first time I was at March Madness, I heard a guy share, and I saw him earlier. I didn't get to hug him yet, but he said, "You can't save your image and your freedom at the same time." He stood right here at this podium and said it, and he said somebody had said it to him, and blah blah blah. But you can't save your image and your freedom at the same time. And what I can say is that over the past year, I have caused harm. I have hurt people. I have lied. I've been deceptive. And
get free, bro.
And you know what's funny? I keep saying that shit. It's not funny, man. It's crazy because we talk about pain a lot in here. And it's like, you know, your pain bought you your seat. And there were some defects and some shortcomings. See, the defect is the essence. That's on the inside. But the shortcoming is the application, the substance of my defect. And so I got some shortcomings in my life, right? And it caused a lot of pain. Over and over and over and over, and people will say, "When is the pain going to become great enough?" And that used to piss me off because I was in a lot of pain. But the problem was I was also in bondage, and so for me it was really hard. Because I'm sitting there and looking at it, and I know, because you know, in the step working guy, man, when we're doing our step work, the only thing I'm doing is putting my disease on trial, and this is the motion of discovery, right? And so sometimes what I got to do is I just got to look at it and look at all the evidence of what my life looks like without spiritual principles. Damn, this is what it looks like. This is what it looks like. But you know, I can't thank myself into a new way of acting. And so I know that I got these problems, and I know I got these shortcomings that I need to identify, but I wasn't ready. And then the pain. And it's really hard for me to share about my pain in that situation because the person that I harmed, it was in a lot more pain than me. Because I can't imagine. And then here we are. So this is what I've learned. We come in here seeking an absence from pain. Right? And we get the gift of desperation. It's fueled by this fear. And the problem is once the pain dissipates, it goes away for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, Matt starts telling itself, oh, wait a minute, you can do it differently this time. And so like the disease of addiction does that to me, man. It did it to me with the dope. What? Why would I think that this shit would be any different? You know, I got out of prison. I came in here. I was sleeping with anybody I could mess with. I was doing all the things that I could do. I was coming to meetings just to hook up with women. And I was just flaunting this program. I turned it into a social club. Because I liked being seen. I liked people listening to me. I started using this podium. Validation and attention was my first drug. That's the first substance I got addicted to. Don't get it twisted. And so I can't come in here and think that I've gotten all this time clean and I'm doing all real good and stuff and that this still won't bite me. It won't still, like, I won't walk away from this podium and feel like elevated or some shit. And what I know is that my ego isn't just that superior complex. It's also the inferior complex. My ego has been designed. Look, and I wanted to share on something, but I'm gonna just go where I think the Spirit is leading me. When I was in the eighth grade, I ran away from home. I had already been using substances, and I felt like nobody in my life loved me. And I felt like I was unwanted, and I want to go, and I got this whole like plan about what I'm going to do. I got my backpack, and I take off. I'm in the eighth grade, and I had this little clubhouse that I built, and I was out there for 2 or 3 months. I was stealing my food from this Kroger, and I wasn't going to school or nothing, and I was lonely. And I remember I used to stay up all night long until the sun came up because I couldn't go to sleep in the dark. I was just a kid and I was fucking scared. And I remember as soon as the sun would crack it, I'd feel okay enough to go to sleep. And I did that over and over and over. And I'd go to my friend's house and they'd give me a bowl of cereal out their window and shit because their moms won't let me come in. And I'm living like this for a long time. I got this little clubhouse. And this homeless man, or I don't know anything about the guy. He was just an older, dirtier dude, and I just assumed he was homeless. You know, he started coming in there, and he would use his drug in my little clubhouse, and he'd give it to me. I don't remember no choo-choo trains. I don't know about y'all, man. I remember the first time I tried a hard substance, but I don't remember no like euphoric shit. I remember the one thing that I remember is that I was lonely, scared, hungry. But as soon as I hit that shit, I forgot. I forgot how tired I was. I forgot how hungry I was. I forgot that nobody loved me. I forgot how lonely I was. I forgot how scared I was. The only thing I knew is I want more. That's it. That's the only thing I knew. And so I'm in this clubhouse and this guy, he's getting me high and he's getting me high. And then slowly and slowly he's telling me shit, you know. Oh, I let him touch on me and shit. And he would leave and I would hate myself. There's got to be something wrong with you, man. And I tell myself when he comes back, I'm going to kill him. Take my knife, I'd hide it under my little cushion. Soon as he comes back, I'm going to kill him. I swear to God I am. And he'd come back and my stomach would start turning because I know he got fucking dope. I hated myself for that. And as I grew up, and the longer I stayed in my disease, man, I told myself I always have an excuse to get high for the rest of my life. Y'all can't identify with that shit. That level of powerlessness that I was convinced of. And the only thing that gave me a semblance of power was fucking dope. If I had the right substance on me, she'll hang out with me. If I got the right shit on me, man, I can go over there and they're going to let me in. My mom might love me again if I give her enough. It says that some of us... Hold on. I'm sorry, y'all. It says, inner or personal unmanageability is often identified by unhealthy or untrue belief systems about ourselves. I don't know what story you told yourself, what untrue belief system you told yourself, but I sure the fuck know what mine's was. If you love them, they're going to leave. If you love them, they're going to leave. Nobody's going to love you. Especially once they find out what you was doing with that man back then. Especially when they find out that you witnessed your sister get molested and you didn't do nothing about it. Especially when they find out that you watched your mom get beat over and over and over again and would hide because you wanted to do something but was so fucking scared. And then the next day my mom would tell me, "You're the man of the house. You're the man of the house. We need you." And I fucking didn't feel like a man until I found drugs. And the reason I'm sharing all that is because if you're sitting in here right now and you have a story, everybody in this room got a message. Every single one of us. Look, you don't have to articulate real well. You don't got to come up here and yell. The most powerful message I ever heard carried, there wasn't words involved. Just fucking tears. Y'all know what that's like?
Yeah.
To feel that empathy? Because look, for me, man, and the program is a gift because I got empathy when I came in here. And now I can get out of self just long enough to get some freedom. Hold on. Because my bondage is in here. But so is my freedom. And the problem for me, and the problem has always been, is that what I'll do, is that I will convince myself that there's nothing good is going to last in my life. Hey, I don't know about anybody else, but I have been very successful since I've been clean. I'm sure most of us have. We take 100% pay increase when we come up in this motherfucker. We start getting money and shit. Now everybody got Amazon accounts and fucking Netflix and y'all motherfuckers. And look, I'm all for it because I know for me, man, if I stole your Xbox, that's the only time I ever got something for myself. And I came up in here and I started, because I will, man. I'll just fucking buy shit that I don't need and... But it doesn't matter what I have out here. My whole life, I've been looking for a physical solution to a spiritual problem. My whole life. Right? And then, it dawned on me. Is that my timer? Oh man, don't fuck with me, bro. Because check this out, man. I don't know if anybody else... Do y'all remember active addiction? Don't it feel like a dream? Does anybody else feel... Like, it's almost like I can't even... It's like so weird to think about. If I drive down that street I used to use on, I'm like, fuck, man, it feels weird. You know, it feels like a dream. And the reality that I live in today is completely different. I was so convinced back then that everybody was against me. And here it says... And I love this because it says, one aspect of our addiction was our inability to deal with life on life's terms. We tried drugs and combinations of drugs to cope with a seemingly hostile world. We forgot about the times when we sat alone and were consumed by fear and self-pity. And then here's what we did. We avoided the reality of our addiction. All right. And so while I'm in addiction, my reality looks fucked up. And I got clean. And I thought that if I stopped using drugs, I was going to be happy all the time. You know, I was like, man, the drugs are the reason why I'm always sad. And then I start feeling. Over the last 5 months, since October, I have been in the midst of a pretty severe spiritual awakening. And I don't know about anybody else, man, and for me, but it's not fucking fun. You know, it sucks on a lot of levels because I got like this whole new awareness piece about all the pain that I've been causing people and all the harms that I've been doing and all the ways that I've been besmirching my name and all the things I've been doing since I was clean, and I'm no longer comfortable with that shit. And so what it feels like because a lot of that shit was a big piece of who I was. Y'all know when Matt shows up, he's going to flirt with a newcomer. He's going to be there. Don't worry about it. Y'all know when Matt shows up, he's going to be happy. He's going to be talking. He'll be the life of the party. He'll be dancing in a fucking chair. Everything's Matt's fun. Yeah. I don't feel fun no more. You know? Not that it won't come back, because it might. But what I realized was a lot of the things that I was doing, a lot of the ways that I was talking, a lot of the places I was going, was for validation and attention, and it wasn't authentic. And recovery, the last 5 months, has given me the ability to actually be authentic. And that's the biggest gift. Because check this out, man. And this is, and I don't know about anybody else, but I wore a mask for so long that I was almost convinced that that was me. Y'all know? When I removed the mask, I had this identity crisis. You know, like, what kind of music do you like, bro? You know? For real. Because sometimes, I would listen to music that I don't know about y'all. I got like speakers in my car and shit. And I will, before I turn into a parking lot, change the song that I'm listening to a cooler song so motherfuckers hear me beating. Thank you guys, because I know if you're laughing, that means you can relate a little bit. And I don't feel so crazy. You know, I can't pull in here listening to Taylor Swift, you know. What's my favorite color? I don't know. I picked a color that I thought, you know, it can't be any of the girl colors. That's gay. Can't be any of this. You gotta, you know, I didn't even know what my favorite color was. And it's cool because check this out. Every morning when I wake up, not every morning, but my partner, we got this thing where we wake up and it's like, what's your favorite color today? Because today I have a choice. And when I wake up in the morning and I pick my favorite color, it's my symbolism that I also have a choice today. Because I know what it's like to wake up without a choice. I know what I have to do today. One day at a time, I just got to get $40. My dreams and ambitions was reduced to a half gram. That's it. Well, no. I just got to get well. If I get well, then I can go chase my dreams and ambitions. And they're a little bigger. But I can't do shit without that first 40. And guess what? When I wake up in the mornings now, I wake up with a choice. And I get to choose. Am I going to live today from self? My sponsor, he says this a lot, man. He's like, you know, I wake up in the morning and the first thing, the self-centeredness, overcomes me first thing in the morning. What's my day going to be like today? How are they going to treat me when I get to work? Is this going to happen when I... In my first step, I get this recognition that I've been drowning. I've been drowning in a sea of ego. That my whole life, that everything, it's all revolves around me and all the traumas and everything that I've been through, and I've created this whole world that I live in. And And in order to escape that world, I needed you guys. Y'all know medicine, religion, psychiatry is insufficient. Do you know what medicine, religion, and psychiatry don't have? Community. I needed this. Look, what we go from selfish to selfless. That's what the step work does. It goes from ego to service. You know? And so what I had to learn in this process was that I am not the most important person even in my own life. I just got full custody of my son. He's 10 months old, almost 10 months old, okay? And his mom has not seen him since November. And the DCS people, they came and she was, you know, whatever, you know, what we do. And they took him from her care when he was 30 days old. And they put him in my care for emergency placement. And at first I was real resentful because it was so inconvenient. Y'all know how we get resentful because of inconvenience. But now what I have this thing where I want my son to have his mom. And then I go to pick up my other son, you know, a few weeks ago, and his mom got track marks all up and down her arms. And I sat there and I cried, and then I hugged her. I don't know about you guys, man, but I didn't have that ability before Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not angry at them. I feel sad for them, man. They love their kids, man, but that fucking dope. And so, you know, my boys, I got both of them right now. You know what I mean? And check this out. I'm not saying that I'm on no pedestal or whatever, because I really, it's hard, it's heavy, and I got a tribe that fucking helps me. But I want them to get better. I want them to get better, man, because I know what it's like to grow up with a mom that can't come out of the fucking bathroom. Yeah. Share that, man. And one thing that has happened for my children that didn't happen for me is daddy's never going to be locked in the fucking bathroom. I can give them that. I'm powerless over what their moms do, but check this out. If I stay in position, long enough, the door opens regardless. That's my experience. That's why, the desperation we was talking about, the desperation is fueled by fear, and when you move into passion, it's fueled by faith. Just for today, have faith in somebody in NA that believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Check this out. I know every single person in here wants to help me in my recovery. That's why y'all are sitting here. You know? And the thing is that what I needed from this program, I got. And it was love. That's what it was. I tried to think about, you know, like, what this program has given me and what the biggest gifts are, and none of my material shit are a gift, because all of that is like a puppy. It looks real good, but it shits a whole lot. And everybody want a puppy until they got to clean up some shit, you know? But man, I have relationships that are priceless. I have this job, right, that I work in crisis services, so it's a gift. I have an extremely insane type of field of work that I'm in, but the ability to be employable, number one, is fucking, you know, crazy. The fact that I'm dependable at my job is even crazier. But like this week was real heavy because, you know, in our job, sometimes we come across some stuff, and Monday was particularly heavy for me. there was a suicide that took place, and I was on the scene trying to comfort the family, and that's kind of where we were on that. And then at the end of the day, it was a 14-year-old that was a victim of sexual assault, and I was 14 in my sexual assault. And so, like, two things in one day, man, and it was super heavy. And I remember I got home from work, and I'm kind of just trying to process all of it, because feelings are really hard for me sometimes. And I used to try to put all these judgments on my feelings, like, man, that's a bad feeling. You don't want to be sad, and you don't want to have guilt, and those feelings right there are bad. You don't want those. And then there are good feelings. But now what I understand is that there are no bad feelings. There are negative and positive feelings. Negative feelings cause me to contract, go inward, and positive feelings cause me to expand. And so I need to understand that, because sometimes when I'm feeling my feelings, I need to understand that it is okay to feel that feeling, and it doesn't make me any less of a person. And I this was extremely difficult for me. I don't know about anybody else, but I hate being sad, and I hate being afraid, and I hate being jealous, and I hate being I hate that stuff. And so what it was I was on the inside, I was shaming myself for feeling these feelings. And what I know now is that my feelings are so fucking amazing. If I didn't feel that pain that I felt, just take a second real quick. Why are you sitting here? Just real quick. I mean, somebody might... Look, this isn't just a regular meeting where you're getting your meeting sheet signed. I don't think there's anybody drug court sitting here. Anybody sitting here from drug court? No, we all... Oh, shit. My bad, dog. My bad. Hey, but you got a badass drug court lawyer, man. That motherfucker sends you here, bro. And then I remember somebody... What was that, Brittany? You had the ankle monitor our first year here. And it was like, oh yeah, she got. But we're here, man, because we. It was bedazzled. It was. I thought that was so cool too. Like, damn, you're on this mountain with an ankle monitor. But we're here. Okay, we're here because we chose to be here. You know. And you know, the funny thing about desire, because they say, you know, the only requirement is the desire to stop using. The only thing about desire, man, is I remember very vividly sticking a needle in my arm at the same time as having the desire to stop using. Yeah. Crying. Because I wanted to fucking stop. But I couldn't. And so when I tell you, when I say, think about what it was that got you here, right? When you first came to NA, and the reason you stayed, when I think about for me, I'll never forget it. It wasn't because I wanted to stop getting high. That's not why I came to Narcotics Anonymous. Getting high was the only thing I had. That was the only chick that wasn't going to leave me. You know? And so it wasn't because I wanted to stop getting high. What the problem for me was that when I looked at my life and I was able to have just a moment and look and see what the entirety of my life had become, I was a liability to everybody. And I got so sick and tired of just being a liability that I want to mean something. And if I stop using just long enough, I'll mean something, and then I'll start using again. But I didn't start using again. And the cool thing that Narcotics Anonymous has done for me, and I'm gonna read this real quick, because this is a basic text, and if you didn't know what it was before I just showed it to you, please get with me after the meeting and I'll buy you one, because this book right here saved my life. I was in prison and during COVID, and they shut all the jails and the prisons down. They wouldn't let nobody come in, or we didn't have no meetings. We didn't have no visitation. We didn't have nothing. We didn't have nothing. And the dude from H&I came in, man, and it wasn't this one. It was an introductory guide to Narcotics Anonymous, that little bitty book. And he came to the prison. He did a meeting, and he left a big stack of them on the table, and I took one, and then they locked the whole thing down. And I sat there, and I looked at that book, and I looked at it, and I finally opened it up. And I was walking around the yard, and I was reading shit to people. I was like, man, look at this, bro. This shit. Everybody's like, get away from me, man. I just thought it was, you know what I mean? Like, it says, we may never be able to remember all of our past mistakes. We do, however, give it our best and most complete effort. It's talking about the eighth step. We begin to experience real personal feelings of a spiritual nature. Where once we had spiritual theories, we now begin to awaken to a spiritual reality. And when I was thinking, I was like, man, awakening to a spiritual reality. What is the program of Narcotics Anonymous? What is it? Our program is a set of principles written so simply we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. And so for me, when I learned this, because check this out, I don't care how many steps you write on and how long you spend in your notebook. But if you don't take the principle behind the step and apply it to your life, you didn't do anything. Okay? I'm not going to look. And the only reason I say that is because I was that guy. I just wanted to get through it real quick so I could stand up here and be like, I'm a 12-step member because I wanted some clout, right? But I wasn't practicing the principles that was behind the step. I had to go all the way back to square one. And I know what my life looks like without hope. I know what my life looks like without honesty. I know what my life looks like without faith or compassion or empathy. I know what my life looks like without love. And because I have something to give contrast, I am grateful for the contrast. I'm grateful for every friend that I had that wasn't a real friend. I'm grateful for every broken and damaged relationship. I'm grateful for every trap house, every fucking needle puncture, every single thing, because I needed the contrast. Because now I know what life was supposed to look like. And because now that I get to live in this spiritual reality, I understand that the biggest contribution that will ever be made to my life is what I'm able to contribute to somebody else. My name's Matt. That's all I got.
Give him another hand.